Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. And this is episode number 361. And I'm your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, coming to you once again from the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out. Yeah, we do live chat every week. I try to interact with you guys in there. And it's a party. It's a small party. And they're behaved so far. But you never know with these paranormal crowds how they get in chat rooms. Tonight's news includes Flight of the Phoenix. The dust flies over the Loch Ness Monster experiment, still going, and the top destinations for UFO sightings. And we're going to talk about the Plymouth UFO sighting solved, or another kind of thing I have for that story, two UFOs and a wedding. I don't know which one I like better. And we'll also talk about the loss of a crop circle pioneer. And like I mentioned, it's Tuesday, July 24th, and I've got a short week coming up. It's I'm going to be in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania this Friday. Friday night, it's going to be a full week. I still got to work. I just remembered. But I'll be out in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania Friday night for the Kecksburg UFO Festival that does kick off on Friday evening and goes all weekend long. And I'll tell you, if you've never been to the Kecksburg UFO Festival, this is unlike any kind of paranormal conference convention that you've ever been to. And trust me, I've been to paranormal conferences from Maryland to Florida to Texas to Oklahoma and just about every state in between. And I'll tell you what, this is extremely unique. Granted, it is geared toward the UFO culture, because Kecksburg was the home of a UFO crash back in 1965. So, yeah, they know UFO stuff. And it's beyond that. It used to be the county, like a county fair type thing, or a city days type thing, or whatever they called it. But they've all combined everything into one little fantastic festival. They have a burnout contest, which is awesome. I love the burnout contest. They just chain trucks and cars and even ATVs and motorcycles to get into the action. Chain them to a big concrete slab and they just go. And the smoke fills the air. It's a lot of fun. They also have a bathtub race. There's a lot of stuff for kids there. Kids tractor pull, which is really cool. Tons of fair food, fair rides. Some of the best hamburgers I've ever had, at least in Pennsylvania. And arts and crafts. And there's even a parade, and a parade with fire trucks, old fire trucks. So if you're into that kind of stuff, my goodness, it's exciting, it's fun. And oh yeah, there's also a UFO conference on Sunday. And lots of speakers, lots of UFO people, lots of cryptid people, and some ghost people. So it is a paranormal convention, even though it's called a UFO conference. Stan Gordon has been putting this thing on for a number of years. He is the guy, the go-to guy in Western Pennsylvania when you're talking about Bigfoot, you're talking about any kind of cryptid thing, and especially UFOs. He's a UFO Bigfoot researcher and author. He's going to be giving an update on the more recent UFO Bigfoot and other strange encounters from the local area as well as statewide. You can find more information about Stan Gordon at stangordon.info. And also there, Bob Gaddy. Bob was a reporter for the Greensburg Tribune Review back in 1965, and he was on the scene as the search for the UFO was taking place on December 9th, 1965. And Bob is going to tell his story of what he experienced and saw in the vicinity where the object fell. Also speaking, Ed Kellerman, who is a paranormal investigator and author, is going to be giving a presentation on local hauntings and ghost encounters. Yes, I mentioned this isn't just a UFO thing. It's also ghosts. And not only UFOs and ghosts, but we also have Seth Breedlove. I'm looking forward to this. I've met Seth a few times. I've seen him present. He's a fantastic guy, and he's an award-winning filmmaker. He's a director of the Small Town Monsters production company and 2017's Cryptozoologist of the Year, which is voted by Lauren Coleman. And Seth produced the recent film Invasion on Chestnut Ridge that covers the Kecksburg incident and the strange encounters around the ridge. And that film will be shown at the conference. More information about Seth and all of his movies, smalltownmonsters.com. Also going to have one more speaker there, Aaron Dunbar. Aaron is a local author from Kittening and a producer of the recently released family movie about Bigfoot called A Wish for Giants. It's basically made around the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And he actually wrote a book. I got the book, I don't know if it was last year or the year before. Great book. And I'm looking forward to this. I've not seen this movie yet, so I already read the book, like I said, and I can't wait to see it on screen. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it may even be a tearjerker. I don't know. He's going to be giving a presentation, and we'll show that movie at the conference. And like I mentioned, I've read the inspirational book, but I've yet to see this movie. And you can check out Aaron Dunbar's work at awishforgiants.com. And if you can't tell, I'm a little excited about this. The Kecksburg UFO Festival, one of my favorite things to do this year. I've got a lot of other events I'm going to be at. I had one in August, the Summer's Inn Squatch Watch in Tallanesta, Pennsylvania. Well, that's been canceled, so I got a little break. I have a bunch of events in October, but I got a little time to kind of rest and relax before that mayhem hits. And I'm excited, too, because I already got some on the calendar for 2020. And if you have, I should say 2019, not 2020, not yet. But if you have any information about any event and would like to hear about it on this show, as well as have it on my website, which gets thousands of hits. It's lots of people look at this list all over the world. And I've done my best. I've tried to make it as inclusive as I can for paranormal conferences, conventions, UFO stuff, Bigfoot stuff, cryptozoology stuff, I should say. And get that out to the general public. And I can't do it all by myself because there's so many conventions, so many conferences, so many different places to search and people to just do it differently. And I know what's going on around here in the northeast section of the country for the most part, but I don't know all of these things. And if you have any information about an event, you're putting one on yourself or you're going to go to one and you don't see it on my list, just let me know. I don't know everything. I may sound like it sometimes on the show, but I don't know everything. I don't know everything that's going on, I should say. Maybe I do know everything. We'll find out in a couple minutes here. But yeah, I could use your help with this because I like to have this list, have everybody's stuff because I love this stuff. I love going out to these conferences, conventions because you learn so much from other people. And yeah, some people are full of it, but you're going to meet a lot of great people that have a passion for what they do, and you can learn a lot from a lot of other people in the particular field that you're interested in, or if you just have a general interest in this stuff, or even as a researcher and an investigator. People ask me questions at these things, I answer you. I'll be honest with you about the topics at hand, and you'll find a lot of genuine people at these events. Not everyone's out for 15 minutes of fame. Not everyone's out to just sell you a book. You'll have those, but for the most part, we're all genuine people, and I like to enjoy these things just as much as I like to go there and speak about these subjects. So if you don't go to these things, you're missing out. I guess that's all I got to say on that. And with that, we're going to jump into this week's news and cryptid news this week. I got a few stories here. I think I've gone UFO crazy because of this event coming up. But, yeah, we've got, well, let's get through the cryptid stuff first. A story that's part cryptid and two parts conspiracy theory. Well, that one flies in the news this week. This is one of those popular stories that I think a lot of people have probably already seen. But I don't know. I don't know what you've seen, a purported screen capture of a bird that appears to be either gold or maybe even on fire. I don't know how a bird can fly when it's on fire, but that's what they're saying, has appeared in a variety of paranormal news stories and YouTube channels within the last week or so. But could it really be true? One of the initial outlets for the story was through the blog of UFO Sightings Hotspot. In the story, there is a link to a YouTube video where the host, who is hashtag MrMBB333, sets up the photo in his July 14th video as being contributed by the YouTube channel Unbiased and On the Fence. Well, it seems that all other stories have come out since this video, as the UFO Sightings Hotspot story came out on July 17th, and Paul Seaburn released a story on July 19th via Mysterious Universe. And if we let the evidence speak for itself, which is what I always say here on the show, it does provide an interesting image of a bird. Well, I guess you could describe it as a phoenix. It looks gold. It looks bright. Could be on fire. I don't know. I don't see any smoke or anything, but it's not on fire. It just looks golden. Some may say this is CGI. Other people are saying, well, how can you fake this when it's taken from a webcam? And a lot of people just think it's just absolutely true. Yeah. Well, we need to go beyond the photograph. We have to dig into the story a little bit. Sometimes you have to do that to figure these stories out. So first things first, one of the things that's put this story into the headlines is the mystery and conspiracy theory behind it. Now, it's reported that the area has been closed off due to a fissure, which is a crack in the ground that officials are keeping an eye on. Now, the 100-foot-long and growing crack is close to Yellowstone National Park, so that's made a few people jump to the conclusion that it's part of the potential supervolcanic eruption that's supposed to happen, any minute now, or some other event in the paranormal related here. Now, others think it's quite odd that this area was closed off, and then all of a sudden, this strange bird shows up. So what's to make of all this? What's to make of the strange fissure? What's to make of the area suddenly closed off and this bird suddenly showing up? Well, let's take a closer look. According to East Idaho News, park rangers were alerted by climbing guides that a rock fissure was expanding way back on July 10th. Now, rangers closed the area as well as the area below it out of safety concerns for a potential rock fall. So the Hidden Falls area is closed not due to just the fissure caused by anything, whether it's potential volcanic activity or anything else, but cracks in the large area above a cliff. So odds are this fissure being up on a cliff, probably not caused by volcanic activity, but either way, the concern here is that it's above a cliff area where there is where people can go and look at these falls. So they don't want rocks falling on people. It's just not good for business. It's not good for your insurance either. So despite claims to the contrary, nearby Jenny Lake is actually open to the public, despite the somewhat misunderstanding or potential leap of thought by some covering the story. I actually went to the webcams and actually saw people milling around this Lake Jenny that people said was closed. Well, it's not closed. And you can easily go to a bunch of other websites that give you up-to-date information that says, yes, it is in fact open. So if officials thought a strange fire bird was on the loose, flying around this area, well, they'd have to do a better job of closing off additional areas. I mean, how do you keep a bird that's obviously free and flying around in the picture? How do you keep it contained? You close the entire park? Well, they didn't. So if it's out there, people can see it. Now, I actually reached out to the company that maintains the webcams in the area, as well as some other people that might have a little bit of information about this potential webcam sighting. And wouldn't you know it, they had no idea what I was talking about. And I wasn't surprised by that. Now, a webcam doesn't mean that it's streaming video. It's going to be a screen capture. So that's what that's what this person took or saw of this purported bird, whether it looked like that or not. So the fact that people are saying, well, you can't fake a webcam, yes, you can. If it's a screen cap, and even then, there are ways around anything with digital video. You can do pretty much anything you want anymore. This is 2018. So the image was more than likely taken from a still, and I'm going to guess it was played with a little bit. I did zoom in on the area, and it does look like it was altered a little bit with some decent software. It wasn't done by some hack. It was done by somebody who knew what they were doing, but it looked like it was photo editing software. And it does look like it's actually a bald eagle, so I'd love to see that original picture, which is another thing. I wasn't able to find the original picture through basic searches of photographs through different means, which is normally what I was hoping I would find, but I didn't. Now, if a video with this flaming creature were presented, I would have a little bit more merit to the story. And again, we could still analyze that video and look into this. But despite all this, I'm going to go out there on a limb, and I'm going to say that this story has had its wings clipped. And all puns intended. I went on a limb, and I clipped the wings. I know. Horrible sense of humor I have. I know. I get it. I'm very dry. Very dry. But you'll get used to it. And speaking of cryptozoology, a pair of guests' posts on New Zealand news website highlights the range of emotions on display from this recent Loch Ness Monster research experiment conducted by Otago University. And if you haven't heard of this, I don't know where you've been. The research project is aimed at collecting over 250 water samples from a variety of depths in search of small pieces of DNA from creatures that inhabit Loch Ness. And this is something I've been talking about, this story, well before it became popular. I was talking about this last year. I made mention of it. And, you know, when they were planning it, and they were getting ready to do it for this year. And it's not over yet, folks. We're going to hear more about this probably throughout this year. And it's going to be big next year when they do release the information behind it, whether they find anything or not. And obviously the big prize, of course, is hopefully finding the scientific proof that the Loch Ness Monster does in fact exist. And that's even if Professor Neil Gemmell is doubtful that it exists. Now, Gemmell is the one behind the experiment and has been the face of the research since the story broke, again, sometime last year. And an opinion piece in the spinoff was recently published by Joel McManus, and in his article, he stated that the search was an expensive embarrassment to those at the university and made the students and faculty look like crackpots. Well, he goes to the university himself, so, you know, this is kind of his viewpoint from Otago University. And his article was published on July 15th, but it actually had been corrected the following day and now includes the correct expenses as well as a follow-up by Professor Neil Gemmell himself. Now, Gemmell says, quote, Joel McManus's opinion piece calls into question the scientific integrity and credibility of my team, many of whom are internationally acclaimed for their research. Quite simply, they would have not have enjoyed an endeavor that they thought foolish or likely to cause harm to their reputations. This is a scientific endeavor with exceptional credentials that will document the life in Loch Ness in unprecedented detail. We are dubious that there is a monster, but the global appeal of that legend has enabled us to describe the scientific process in a new form of genetic investigation to audiences we have rarely or never connected with previously. At its heart, our project will deliver fundamental new knowledge. It is this, plus the unparalleled opportunity to communicate this science and the scientific process on which it is based, that has brought together an exceptional array of scientists. Unquote. There you have it. So he actually replied to this. Granted, it's pretty much the university newspaper, so of course he's probably looking at it. And was more than likely told about what was being said about him and his research staff. Now, another article on the same website, the spinoff, Ellen Rikers published her own take on the story, which seemed to agree with the professor. And she wrote, quote, "Let's be real. Most people aren't going to click on a story about environmental DNA methods, but a story about one of the world's most enduring mysteries? Hell yes. Instead of trying to make people care about a niche piece of science for its own sake, Gemmell repackaged it into a plesiosaur-shaped Trojan horse. Now, thanks to Nessie, millions of people around the world have heard about this cutting-edge tech and perhaps gleaned some understanding about how the scientific method works." Unquote. Drop the mic. So the Loch Ness Monster was essentially used as a ploy to get people to read about science. Huh, imagine that. Well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. And at the end of the day, underlines the scientific process and the search for information. Now, belief and speculation, they don't make facts. Data and evidence do. So this wasn't a random search for the Loch Ness Monster. Some people, I don't know, I guess they seem to think it was. But this was a measured review of life within the entire loch, no matter what it might turn out to be. And again, we won't know until next year. Science still does not have to be stale and serious. Sometimes it can use popular culture to engage the general public and get them interested in something that can be viewed as stale and boring. And I think Ellen put it best in her article. Quote, "There's a difference between legit science piggybacking an urban legend and outright wearing a tinfoil hat," unquote. So, yeah, people are a little upset about this, I guess, because they feel that this is a skeptical look at Loch Ness and they're out to prove it doesn't exist. But if you know anything about science, the goal isn't to prove or disprove anything. It's to collect evidence or data about this and then draw the conclusions. You might have a hypothesis about what might happen, your best guess, but you have to let the information speak. That's what science is all about. And again, these new techniques being used in Loch Ness, it's a great way to showcase this because you're using the Loch Ness Monster as a segue into this. And I think that once we get past this, we'll start to see this type of evidence gathered in other areas. And who knows? We might find some findings from this. We might not hear with this Loch Ness experiment, but who knows what this type of experimentation can find elsewhere. And speaking of that, a lot of people have said the professor did not find the Loch Ness Monster. Well, yeah, he didn't hit it with the boat or dredge it up with his collection devices, and it didn't jump in the boat or attack it like some megalodon or whatever's out there, which isn't true, folks. There is no megalodons. Don't buy that. Don't believe in that movie out there. We'll talk more about that when it comes out. But the jury's actually still out. They're still doing data. They're still doing research. Yes, they didn't see the Loch Ness Monster, but they're still sifting through the DNA. They're still looking. So who knows? Maybe they did find it. You'll just have to stay tuned for a few more months. This isn't CSI. You're not going to get the information by the end of the episode. It takes more than an hour to extract DNA, especially when you take 259 samples from various depths, and you're looking for hundreds, if not thousands, of a variety of creatures and animals that inhabit the lake or could even drink from the lake. So there's a lot of creatures out there that this test is going to bring back. And while it's doubtful that proof of a plesiosaur will be found, again, yeah, we're going to have to wait till early next year, early 2019, for any kind of announcement on any new animal discovery, or even if there was nothing exciting discovered. Either way, I feel this story it's already been a success. I really do, because it's gotten so much attention. The story is all over the place. It's in so many different news outlets, United Kingdom, United States, and especially in Australia, where the researchers are from. And I think this is probably one of the most important Loch Ness Monster stories I've ever discussed on the show in 10 years, because it takes this urban legend, it takes this folklore, and it takes this potential living, breathing creature, and it combines it with real science. So I'm excited about this. I know, well, I shouldn't say I know, but it's more than likely. I feel that nothing is found in that regard, but you don't know what else they might find in this. There could be some invasive species that were not thought to be there, or something else creeping around Loch Ness. So just going to have to sit tight, and we're just going to have to wait and see about the results. But we're going to jump into UFO news. We're not going to sit around and wait till next year. We're going to keep going here. UFO news. It's summertime. Yeah. It's July. It's almost August. I know. Man, summer is just flying by so fast. But it's still the middle of travel season. So people are traveling. They're looking for places to go still. I don't know. You should have your stuff booked by now. And if you don't have your stuff booked by now, you can go to Orbitz. Yeah, the travel website Orbitz. It's they've actually published, Orbitz has, an interesting series of UFO hotspots to visit. So it's interesting. 10 hotspots are highlighted as a cross between postcards and old movie posters. And the sites may not be quite what you expected, but there are a few familiar names. And the list starts with Discs of Fire. So it's got, looks like a little postcard. It's, you know, the old type font with a weird picture on it and everything. But Discs of Fire, with the travel destination being ancient Egypt. And it's not just a destination, it's also a time frame. So it's going back to 1440 BC, where it states the scribes of Pharaoh Thutmose III reportedly saw fiery discs floating in the skies. Yeah. Could have been anything. Could have been a meteor. I don't know. Could have been a comet. Could have been, I don't know, Planet X. I don't know. The next stop is 91 BC with the headline Galactic Globe Falls to Earth, where it states Roman writer Julius Obsesquins reported a globe of fire that created noises in the sky. Then it landed. Then it took off again, heading east. Weird. So meteors and comets don't set down on Earth and then get back up and go east. So that's an odd one there. Don't have an explanation. But then again, I wasn't there. Now, I don't want to give away all these cool postcards. There's only 10, so I don't want to name all of them off. But the next few are also ancient sightings. But number 7 here is Roswell, and of course, 1947. And number 8 is the Flatwoods Monster of West Virginia back in 1952. And while a few of these are thought to be explainable, it seems that Orbitz has taken the easy way out just by telling the glorified versions of the stories. It's fine to believe, but this last one's got me a little concerned here. It's got me shaking my head a little bit. It says, spiraling lights haunt Scandinavian skies, and describes the scary-looking large white spiral in the sky seen in the skies over Norway and Sweden back in 2009. And that bothers me a bit because I did cover that story. And despite claims of the contrary, the 2009 incident was the observed failure of a Russian missile launch. A smaller yet similar sighting was recorded over Australia on June 5th, 2010, and was determined to be the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket launch from Florida as it gained altitude. And a lot of people are like, wait, what? Well, yes, rockets, they don't go straight up in the sky like many people think they do. Straight up, no. It would be a tremendous waste of energy. They kind of go sideways, pretty much, and they use the Earth as kind of a catapult to get out of the Earth's magnetic field here, or the gravitational pull, I should say. So, and speaking of Florida, back on the early morning of September 2nd, 2015, you might remember this one, as panic set in over an early morning rocket launch from Cape Canaveral, which was thought to be a missile attack, the end of the world, and, well, maybe a UFO invasion. Again, just a rocket. This time, an Atlas V rocket. Nonetheless, the list from Orbitz, it's pretty interesting, even with that last little faux pas there. It's even a little out of place, I think, for a travel website. It doesn't even have any links to these locations. I don't know, kind of weird. Yeah, and I saw a question in there. I wasn't sure what you were alluding to, but the Loch Ness monster sightings, yeah, they date back to, some people claim, back into ancient history, 1300s, 1600s, 1800s. But really modern-day sightings since the 1930s. And a lot of these are photographs which were fake, such as the doctor photo, which was a fake thing floating in the water. It wasn't even real. It wasn't the surgeon's photo. I'm sorry. The surgeon's photo, that was a fake. But as far as the ancient ones, we have no idea what they saw. But then again, you don't have to go too far in folklore in Europe to know that pretty much every single lake, bigger than a bathtub, had some sort of serpent attached to it, a god attached to it, or some sort of unknown creature attached to it. It just so happens that Loch Ness has just made it into the modern day. And there's been so many hoaxes, so many pieces of misidentification with the Loch Ness monster, from floating logs. There was back in the early days of these sightings, they claimed that this creature came out of the water. And there was actually footprints taken. Casts were taken of these prints and claimed to be proof of the Loch Ness monster. But in fact, it was actually hippopotamus feet. But not a real hippopotamus, not a living hippopotamus. But it was from stuffed hippopotamus legs. I don't know, maybe they made a leg lamp out of it. I don't know. True story. Look it up. Back to this UFO travel sighting thing. Orbitz did this 10-piece postcard thing, which is pretty cool. But strangely, as I was researching this story, which I do, that's what I do, I find links and I just don't paraphrase everything and post links on it and that's it, hang it up and go. I dig deep into these stories, no matter what it is. If it's a claim that a phoenix flew across the sky, I'm going to dig as far as I have to. If I have to send out emails, if I have to call somebody, if I have to find out what's going on, I have to dig through and find dates of photographs and pictures. I do that stuff. I do it for you guys, the listeners. Actually, I do it for myself because I need to know things. And I want you guys to know. I want you guys to be the most educated paranormal people on the planet. That's a lot of P's, but I do. I want you guys to know the truth behind all of these stories. But yeah, when I was researching the story, Orbitz wasn't the only one with the list. There was another website that actually copied the same top 10 list and didn't attribute it at all to Orbitz. So I was trying to figure out which one came first. And Orbitz doesn't have a date on the article. It's like a separate web page. So I don't know when that actually was listed. And I found another copy that had the original top 10, but also had six more. So it was 16 sites, including some more recent ones. That was on an MSN travel website. So I really don't know who did it first. But all I can say about that is someone is definitely stealing somebody else's work here, and nobody is attributing each other. Shame on you. That's not good writing. It's not what you do as a journalist. Now, an earlier list came out back on March 23rd from the website Thrillist and focuses on top sites in the United States, which appeals to me since I'm here in Ohio. So they did include Rachel and Roswell, Nevada, which is home to Area 51, and Rachel is where people get shipped to Roswell from the airport, as well as Aurora, Texas. And Aurora, Texas is the rumored site of a UFO crash. An alien burial back in 1897. Supposedly, this is where spaceship crashed into a windmill, and this alien was thrown out onto the ground and died. Because, of course, you know, a spaceship can travel all across the galaxy, the universe, through all sorts of cosmic gateways and time tunnels and all these other things, and through space debris. But man, it hits a windmill, it's just going to explode, because we know that's just what happens. It also has Lincoln, New Hampshire, which is home to the Betty and Barney Hill story, where they were abducted back in 1961, one of the earliest and most popular abduction stories ever. And the list is it's missing places like Gulf Breeze, Florida, a lot of UFO sightings there, and a couple of other places that I thought maybe they could focus on. But I was very, very happy to see that they included Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And the picture of Stan Gordon standing there made the list. So I was very excited about that. Where do I do my research on these stories? There's a question in the chat room here. If you go to my website, paranewsinsider.com, I have a link there to news, and those news sites are The Anomalist and Unsolved, not Unsolved Mysteries. My gosh, I can't remember. I'm going to have to click on my own link here to figure it out. Okay, Unexplained Mysteries. That's what I meant. Unexplained Mysteries and The Anomalist, two websites that I use, but so many other resources that I use out there. And those are just gateways to popular stories. I do actually, one of the best things you can do, and I'm going to give away my secret here, is do Google News Alerts. Set yourself up with the Google News Alert. I do this especially here living in Ohio because I'm a very big fanatic of mountain lions and cougar sightings in the East Coast. So I set up a number of alerts for different states, especially here in Ohio where I live. Especially the neighboring states to my west, because I want to know what's going on out there. So I set up alerts and I get all kinds of news stories based on the key words that I enter. That can be kind of annoying because you're going to have however many lists you have going. That's how many emails you're going to get every single day. But you could space them out. You can get them to go at different times or whatever, so you're not inundated all at the same time. But again, my gosh, I use search engines. I search all kinds of stories. Sometimes I'll actually have to go off of the internet. Yes, the internet doesn't have all the information in the world. Again, make phone calls, call people in actually some of these areas and get some information, especially with stories that are just breaking. You're not always going to get all the information there. And sometimes you have to do research on the stories themselves, something I've talked about on the show before. If I get a photograph, there are ways to actually research individual photographs to find out when they were put on the internet and who's had them and who's posted them throughout the years. All sorts of different research methods that I employ to bring you guys this news each and every week. So it's not that easy. Like I said, I don't just read these news stories to you and kind of just throw an opinion out there. And no offense, some paranormal radio shows do that. They have guests and they cover the news. Me, I just cover the news. That's what I do. I do these stories. I research this kind of stuff. It's what I do. So I'm used to going through these stories and some of the stuff I've already seen or I've heard of. And I might have actually investigated, or I'm actually investigating these stories as they're breaking and happening. And I've helped actually solve a lot of these stories I've investigated or researched over the years. Actually have investigated stuff. Which ones, you might ask? Well, for example, there was one that happened in South Africa. Again, I live in Northeast Ohio. I do have a passport, but I don't really have the ability to get up and travel to South Africa to research UFOs as they're being documented. But when a photograph of a purported UFO showed up on the internet, I was able to take that photograph, re-edit the UFO out, and research to find out where it came from and found the original source. So I debunked it, but it came out later that it was just a viral campaign for a soft drink company. But I had busted it anyway. But a lot of other people jumped on that research, which is fine. As long as the truth comes out, I don't care who gets it first, as long as they're attributed, if it breaks earlier. I do a little bit of work behind these stories, believe it or not. Speaking of stories, we're still in the UFO arena. Well, stinking, maybe not stinking rich, but bum. If you're not in the chat room, you're missing out. A good piece of the show here. This adds a dimension to it. I like the chat room and don't always pay attention to it because I'm focusing on these stories. I'm kind of staring off into La La Land sometimes. But I do want to make this a piece of the show because it is about you guys. And I'm doing this stuff for you. And if you have questions about what I'm covering or talking about, yeah, I want to expand on that. I definitely want to answer these questions. So, mysterious lights in the sky. We talked about mysterious lights in the skies last week being explainable because it was July 4th on July period, and even it's any day that ends in Y period of certain things that happened. But this is a kind of a unique story, and this is one that I've seen cropping up a little bit more and more. Not the first time I've covered a story like this. Mysterious lights in the sky were reported by hundreds of people over the weekend, especially on Saturday, July 21st, near the Plymouth area of England in the United Kingdom. Social media was abuzz about strange lights moving in the sky, which some thought was actually an airplane exploding in the sky. Others thought they were just plain old UFOs, and their mystery remained until Monday. And people were frustrated about that, but yes, the truth came out on Monday. Yesterday, it was reported that the lights were part of a wedding. Yes, a wedding. That must have been an extremely exciting wedding. Joshua Albin and Elspeth Taylor were celebrating their wedding at Pentilly Castle and had hired the services of a company called Airborne Pyrotechnics. And airbornepyrotechnics.co.uk is their website that gives you plenty of pictures of what these people saw. Now, the lights and fire in the sky were part of the visual entertainment performed by small airplanes that had pyrotechnics attached to them, as well as LED lights on the sides of the planes. Now, typically the performance includes music, which, even if you're probably a mile away that high up, if the planes were blasting it, I don't know how that works, to be honest. I've never seen it. Never seen it done in person. I've seen videos. Not sure how they actually play the music, but I'm assuming it's probably from the ground. But either way, I'm sure that would resonate pretty far, and people, maybe even up to a mile or even maybe a little bit more, would be able to kind of put two and two together when you're hearing music and these things flying through the sky. But alas, it was silent. Now, there was a reason for this. Usually, again, the performance includes music, but due to having the area having tenants very close to the area where the airplanes were performing in, they had asked that it would be a silent entertainment thing, which is kind of awkward. I mean, you got planes flying through the air already. It's going to make a little bit of noise with fire and lights and smoke, but it's going to be quiet. Now, Tim Dews and his son Ben were responsible for the event, and Tim added to the story, quote, "It was the first time we've been asked to do a silent performance." And he also said, "I think we got it down to 29 decibels, which is about the volume of us speaking," unquote. The planes were also asked to fly higher than normal due to extremely dry grass conditions due to a recent heat wave in the area. And I hear that they got rain. People are all excited and tweeting about rain in the United Kingdom. I think that was today, yesterday. I don't know. It's a different day over there anyway. I don't know what's going on over there. It's a whole different day. But yeah, this is not the first time I've heard about these little airplanes doing this stuff. And the fact that they were quiet and the fact that they were flying higher due to these dry conditions, it meant that they were visible to more people in the area. And in fact, if you look at this area on a map, it's very close to Plymouth, United Kingdom. It's on the southwest little leg there of England that sticks down there. And Plymouth, this area would have overlooked this Plymouth area. There was a high concentration of people that were witnessing this event. So there's no mystery that people thought there was something going on. So it's pretty obvious. And maybe if you've not seen this type of aerial phenomena before, yes, you would assume that it is unidentified, because if you can't identify it, then of course it's unidentified flying objects, which is the definition of UFOs for the most part. And Tim added, quote, "We've been mistaken for UFOs before. We did a display at Clay Hill where somebody took a video and it ended up on some weird American website. It got 450,000 hits, unquote. Well, it wasn't my website, and I don't know if my website's weird. Maybe they meant paranormal. I don't know. But yes, it's funny how the skydivers all know that they've been mistaken for UFOs, and even these guys with their pyrotechnic airplanes have also been mistaken for UFOs as well. Yeah, but like I said, this is something that's happening more and more. And there's these companies. There's a few in the United States. I don't think there's too many here on the East Coast, but I know there's a few on the West Coast that actually do stuff between, I guess we could say, west of the Mississippi River. Is that am I allowed to say that, I guess? Yeah, sure. So west of the Mississippi, there's a lot of these companies that do this stuff. Crop airplanes, they convert it to do this stuff outside of crop season. I don't know. Just guessing. Got to be money in that somehow. So who knows? Who knows what people are seeing here? But you'd think, I mean, I'm not going to say England's small, but you'd think that there's two of these companies. And, you know, this castle's probably not a cheap location to rent. So I'm sure people have a little bit of money here, but I'm surprised that they'd never been there before. But again, people here in the United States, they see fireworks and they think UFO. So, who knows? Who knows? But we'll never get used to certain things, I guess. And who knows? But anyway, that's the end of UFO news. And I have some other news. I guess I could kind of sort of put it in with UFO news, but I'd rather not. I'd rather not, because I think this kind of sticks out on its own. And Arizona lights. See that in the chat room. Yes, Arizona lights. The Phoenix lights is what they were called. That was 1997. I hope I got that right. The Phoenix lights, which was a really disorienting thing, because what you see popularized on the videos, you see filmed, basically was what a lot of people reported. And really and truly, that's not what everybody saw. There was a lot of other sightings that happened all over the state of Arizona that night. But the popularized thing is what people were filming over Phoenix. And what people were filming over Phoenix was, in fact, airplanes, military aircraft dropping flares. That's exactly what that was. But that's not what people were seeing in the skies across Arizona. People were seeing a very large triangular object very close to the ground, moving at a great speed at times, and other times slowly moving across the sky. People saw this before it was dark out. So about an hour and a half before the main sighting there in Phoenix. And people saw this moving through that area as well. So Phoenix lights, a really interesting phenomena. And I did cover that in detail last year, because I believe it was, 97 was, 20, is that 20 years? Yeah, 20 years. It was in March sometime in 1997. So I did a follow-up on that, that event. It was a pretty big deal, and it's really, yeah, disinformation. It could have been, but I think it was just all really just a big coincidence. It all just kind of all happened at the same time. Who knows? Maybe they're out looking for this thing too. Maybe they were just, and my thought was, people said that they were dropping these flares in order to get people's attention away from what was going on. But my thought is if this giant thing was going through the area, military flares help do a couple of things. One, they help light up the ground, which these were awful high up in the air. Military flares also light up the sky. So I think that they were actually trying to light up the sky to see if they could see this object a little bit better. For some reason, it wasn't showing up on radar. At least that's what we're told. I don't know. Definitely, Phoenix lights, one of the more intriguing UFO stories over the years. Although, I don't know if you've read anything about the Kecksburg incident, the Kecksburg UFO crash. There's a lot of controversy behind that. There's a couple of people that have differing opinions. And they both researched this both very heavily, and they actually live pretty close to each other. But Kecksburg, the Kecksburg UFO incident, very controversial in itself. And obviously, I'll be talking more about that next week. Can you tell I'm excited? 1965, I wasn't even around. I'm not that old. Not, no offense to anybody that's that old, but no, I wasn't around for that event. I kind of wish I was. It was kind of a neat thing there. But anyway, we have some sad news to end the news with, and it's always kind of hard to cover these things. 39, I wish I was only 39. Now this year we've had pretty big death in the paranormal. And this one is not so much of a huge, I guess, huge story here. But, you know, to some people, for me, I thought that this was a really good person because of what they were attached to and what they did and how they kind of affected, I guess, the paranormal in a different aspect, because they kind of they actually formed a whole new kind of following. And Doug Bauer. Yeah, you've never heard of Doug Bauer. A lot of people have never heard of Doug Bauer. Doug Bauer is he was one half of a duo called Doug and Dave. And if you've ever heard of Doug and Dave, well, they're from the Crop Circle area of the paranormal, and they're from the United Kingdom. And Dave Chorley, who is the other half of Doug and Dave, Doug's partner in this, Dave Chorley, he passed away in 1997 after battling cancer. And Doug Bauer just recently passed away. I want to think he was 89 or 90. But they actually began making crop circles back in 1976. Now, they were using some really crude methods, but eventually they moved to the rope and boards technique that even today is what people are actually still using out there to fake crop circles. Now, through 1978, they were just doing it to have fun. And in 1978, one of their crop circles gained worldwide attention. Bauer was actually inspired by crop circles that were reported in Australia back in 1966. And the two decided to do it. Well, when else would you do something crazy like this? But after a night at the pub. So they could hang out at the pub and then go out and stomp some wheat. Stomp some crops, I guess. The two kept their activities a secret from everyone. I'm sure some people at the pub knew, but even their spouses were not in on this. Doug's wife finally confronted him about the odometer on the family car, and he came clean. But his wife gave him the thumbs up and said, "Go ahead and keep doing this. It's funny. It's hilarious." Doug and Dave continued to make circles until the phenomena grew so large. And then Dave also began to get sick from his cancer, and they felt it was right to actually just step forward. The two fooled the world, as well as experts in the crop circle world known as seriologists, who claimed the circle was genuine, to reporters in 1991, who were then shocked to hear that Doug and Dave had created it right there in front of reporters. So 1991, this was the time when crop circles were at their biggest. The 80s is when this really exploded, and a lot of people got into this research. This was on TV shows, and was reported on the news. It was a worldwide phenomenon. So these people came into this field as experts, and Doug and Dave were behind an overwhelming majority of the crop circles created in England. Now, obviously, yes, there was some in Australia before that, and there was some that they couldn't account for. But again, the ones that they did were the ones that were in the newspapers, on TV news channels. These were the big important ones that people focused on over the years. So they really did impact the belief about crop circles. And yes, a lot of people, they've said, there's no way they're responsible. Two people cannot be responsible for all the crop circles made during their, even during their time. But again, they did a majority of the ones in the United Kingdom. That brought a lot of mystery to this. And yes, it did create a counterculture of researchers and an interest into the field. Doug and Dave did help make this subject very popular. If it wasn't for them, I'm pretty sure this would have just faded away. I mean, really and truly, they did a big job in bringing this to the forefront. Could have just disappeared into the fields. But on the flip side of that, just like paranormal TV shows, they did inspire a lot of other people to create fake circles all over the world. And it's still going on to this day. It's just one of those things. Sometimes when you bring attention to something that just doesn't have a big enough culture to last on its own, sometimes people jump on the popularity and unfortunately do things like this. It is rather unfortunate, but like I said, I think it would have just disappeared into the void had they not popularized it and got a lot of people interested in getting into this. And I see in the chat room, Nancy Talbot, big inspiration for me. I didn't really have any kind of thought process toward crop circles. I thought they were all fake, especially when I read about Doug and Dave, but I looked into her research, BLT research, back in the day before they went their separate ways, and was really interesting to see their work in this and some of their findings. And yes, BOLs or balls of light have also been seen in crop circles, a different phenomena that a lot of people assume with ghosts, but have also been seen with cryptozoology things. And where I'm going this weekend, here I go again, at the Kecksburg UFO Festival, which I'll be that all weekend long, Friday night, Saturday, and most of Sunday. I'll be listening to speakers on Sunday. Chestnut Ridge is one of the areas very close to that area, and it's full, chocked full of mystery. Bigfoot sightings, especially in the 1970s, one of the largest big things of Bigfoot sightings and UFO sightings as well throughout that entire ridge area, but pretty much concentrated in throughout Pennsylvania, and ghost sightings and all sorts of weird stuff. And a lot of researchers have more than one have claimed to see strange lights going through the forest, balls of light. And when I've heard some of these researchers talking about this, I've asked a few of them about crop circle phenomena, if they've heard about balls of light with crop circles, and some of them have, some of them haven't. So I think that's an interesting correlation to this. What does this mysterious stuff have to do with these balls of light flying around in the sky or in the woods? Now, there are some fake videos. You got to be careful. I can think of one when I'm talking about balls of light and crop circles. There's one where you'll see these balls of light zooming around in the circle, and all of a sudden this crop circle just appears in a field. Oh, that one's fake. That one's fake. Somebody did that as a project, so don't believe it. It's not real. It's not real. And yes, I'm excited. Can't wait to go to Kecksburg this weekend. I think that's my third year. I think it's one of those things I heard of a long time ago when I first got into this field, and I said, I gotta go. It's the Roswell of the East. And I finally got a chance to go there a few years ago. Got to know Stan Gordon. He invited me out there, and I got to hang out with Stan. And Stan is an excellent researcher. He's the kind of guy that everybody likes. He gets along with everybody. Well, most everybody. Some people don't like him for certain reasons, but that's a whole other show. But he's such a likable guy. He's extremely knowledgeable, knows his stuff. He's level-headed about things. So many stories. He can recollect all kinds of details about different things, but just a fantastic person, and he's always trying to help out anybody that's trying to get into these fields, and he's inspired so many people, and I just enjoy any time I can around the guy, and to learn anything I can, or to just soak up that knowledge and information that he's full of. And last year I did get a chance to speak at the Kecksburg UFO Festival, but this year I'm not, because I think it's great. Yes, it's great that I'm not speaking, because Stan likes to change it up. He likes to get different people up there and mix it up instead of the same few people year in, year out. That's what a lot of these conferences do, and they kind of burn themselves out with it. So I like and respect what he does, and definitely will be there this week. Hopefully nothing goes wrong. And with that, there we have it. You're going to hear me next week. Don't worry. It's going to be a short week for me as far as gathering new stories, but I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about here on the Paranormal News Insider. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.